Hi, this is Eugene Napick in Toronto.
Hi, this is Candy Minx in Chicago. We're both here for the agency.
And we're here because the other day we were talking about gangster films, and we agreed that we would both sit down and watch Coppola's fantastic film, The Godfather, the first one, which we did. And we had a great discussion about it, and we're going to present it for you today.
Sounds good. And we watched it late at night, and here's our discussion. It's comfortable at my desk. I've got a blanket wrapped around me, a cup of tea here. And I'm pretty excited to talk about The Godfather. Like you, I did not sleep much last night. I also watched The Godfather late at night, staying and falling asleep. And I watched it. I was pretty sure I could talk about it without watching it, but I'm so glad I did watch it recently. Fantastic. Perfect.
Well, it's an opportunity
called perfection.
It really is. It's an opportunity to refamiliarize yourself with some detail as well. So I think that's
totally
important.
Totally. And, you know, I'm going to tell you, I just emotionally gave into it. I was so in it. I didn't even remember. I was like, is this, at one point I remember thinking, oh, wait, is this a period film? Is this the 70s? Is this the 40s? I don't know anymore. It was so Rembrandt luscious. It just didn't matter.
It
was so fantastic.
It's true. You know, I brought my little notebook with me just to jot down a few notes when I was watching it through. And the very first word I wrote down on my notebook was sepia.
Oh, yeah, sepia. That was big in the 70s, too. At least they didn't do it in sepia. You know how they would change films? I mean, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, I think, has a flashback that might be sepia. That today bothers me a little bit. Didn't bother me a few years ago, but now it kind of bothers me. Maybe it won't bother me in a couple more years, but they definitely found all that color. Oh my God, the color was fantastic in that film. it's just
sure
mind-blowing. The red. I noticed the red last night. I did not think about the color red ever before, as far as I know, in that movie. And that's the other thing I want to say about a movie that's perfect. There are just some movies that I consider absolute perfection. And every time I see them, I never fail to get a chill or an emotional delivery or a surprise that I didn't think about before.
Oh, yes, I agree completely. It totally held up for me. And, you know, it really is epic in the best sense of the word, you know. It's huge in scale. It's sweeping in scope. It's a spectacle. It's not just a big budget film. It's a huge metaphor for the way we live, for our capitalist society, as well as being this historical kind of film where they reach back to a cultural history of vendettas.
Well, that's true. There's nothing like a good vendetta story, that's for sure. And I remember reading a book called The Honor Culture, and I'm not sure if that's a good book or a bad book. But it was the idea, the theory being that why were the Hatfields and McCoy a kind of a revenge and fighting group of people in the south of southern states. And the argument was that they were not a farm city culture, but a shepherding culture, where one person had to defend the animals and the livestock, and they were by themselves a lot. So honor and standing up for it was a way to protect your income. I don't know if that's a good theory or a bad theory or if it's debunked, but it always stayed with me. And I think the book's called Culture of Honor. It may be racist. I don't know. I'm going to have to go back and look at that. But it did stay with me as a very interesting argument.
I was fascinated by the little bit, the line in The Godfather when Michael is back in Sicily. And it's just before he sees the woman who becomes his wife. And
right.
They're walking along and he says something like, "Why is it so quiet here?" And one of his bodyguards says, "That's because all the men have been killed in vendettas."
Yes. Yeah.
It's chilling.
Very interesting. It is chilling. It really is chilling. And it also kind of ties into the Second World War. I don't know if just crime family. I think it's also war, because Michael served in the war and he was considered a war hero. Some of the themes in the movie that, you know, for me, obviously, the major thing is I am so glad I lived in a time when this movie came out. I don't know. Maybe in past times people feel that about art. I'm very glad it is an emblem for my life, and it formed my thinking about our society. It helped form my thinking. I did grow up in a left-wing social democracy, socialist aristocratic society when I was a kid. And this film sort of gave me a way to understand that about capitalism. It isn't just, maybe it's American capitalism, but it's totalitarian capitalism, which I would say that there's no rules, regulations. You have no restraints against how you make money. And I think that's what's fascinating about the motif of crime syndicate for capitalism.
You know, I'm not sure if that's entirely true. I think they have plenty of rules. They're just perfectly willing to break them.
Okay, that's true. Okay, fair enough. I guess I meant rules in terms of regulating, like, housing market, regulating how you kill someone, how you make money. I really meant it in that kind of economic sense.
One rule was...
Rather than ethical, yes.
One rule was the Corleones didn't want to deal in drugs.
Yeah, and that was funny.
And they didn't want to deal in drugs mostly because Don Corleone felt it would be eventually very bad for them.
Yeah.
Right? Well, it wasn't so much that drugs are bad as it was it would be bad for them. And when the meeting of the five families occurs, we see also how racist they are. Because the agreement is, well, all right, we're going to allow drugs, but we're going to control it. And by controlling it, they meant they're only going to sell drugs to black people or restrict it to black areas. And just in case you didn't catch the racism, they called those people animals.
Yes, terrible.
Right, yep, the people they wanted to sell drugs to, they called animals. They didn't even think of them as human. It's so horrifying.
Right. Totally. I think the other thing that was kind of interesting that struck me last night, and I don't know if it had struck me before, is when that movie came out, you know, part of the movie is this idealism of youth. You know, there's Michael. He's going to be protected. The Al Pacino character, he's not going to be part of this crime family. He's not going to do dirty work. He's going to go to university.
Yes, and he did not think of himself as part of that.
No.
For instance, when Kay is at the wedding, he says to her, "This is my family, Kay, but it's not me."
Right.
Right? And we see the change, I think, in the hospital. When he goes to the hospital and there's that incredible sequence when he realizes, oh no, they're going to come to kill my father.
Yes.
Right? And after the shooting, he says, "I'm with you, Pop."
Yep. Yep.
And as well, when he gets punched in the face, what we see is that his cheeks puff out just like his dad.
Right, right.
I mean, it's now looking back, it seems so obvious, but I never really thought of it that way before.
Well, I have another perspective too. I'm going to say there's some different mythology in this. There is the sacrifice of the virgin. First of all, we see at the wedding, Don Corleone has to, every father on his, you know, has to bequeath a wish by their community on the day their daughter gets married. Apparently that's some kind of ancient...
I think not just a wish, but I think the way they put it was you cannot refuse a request
on
the day of your daughter's wedding.
There you go. Fine. That's true. And at one point, a fellow that comes in that is a little bit like Frank Sinatra comes in and he tells how his career was improved and he needs from Don Corleone, he helped him get a record, get away from a band that was owning him. And that's a Frank Sinatra story. He did work for a big band and they would not release him from a contract.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. And then he wants to break into the movies and they won't hire him in the movies. So when Robert Duvall's character, also that character is played by Al Martino, who it's also rumored was helped. Really, it was literally, this is meta. This is how meta it is. It wasn't Frank Sinatra. It was that performer, and he played himself in the movie playing Johnny Fontaine because apparently Crime Syndicate had helped him allegedly improve his career. So he goes to when Robert Duvall goes to Hollywood, he talks to the man that's going to has the potential to hire him, and this guy goes, "I'll never hire him. He corrupted this woman. She was a good girl. She was wonderful. She was fantastic." Of course, on the side, he says it was the best ass he ever had. He'd already been with this woman. But this performer, Johnny Fontaine, ruined this woman. Her life was over. She was corrupted. And then what you find out is
corrupted because she walked away.
Okay, fair enough. That's true. I also think that it was alluding to a kind of a sex initiation, personally. And then I think it also is a foreshadowing for when Michael goes to, apparently he's in love with Kate. As soon as he gets to, you can tell it's like the next day he's in Italy. He falls in love with this girl in the community,
Yeah, like
and
thunderstruck.
thunderstruck, and he corrupts her to the point where she actually dies. She doesn't, she walks away too, but by death. And so there's been a virgin sacrifice, an innocent girl. Both girls are described and portrayed as innocent, and they are gone. I believe that's the moment he decided to serve his father, when that girl was killed. And when he gets back to America, and right, that scene is so, I had to sit up and I was so scared in the hospital. I've seen this movie, I can't even tell you how many times, but I was completely terrified in that hospital scene as if I'd never seen it. When he changes the room that his father is in and he pledges to be with his dad. For me, I saw sexual sacrifices,
Interesting.
virgin sacrifices in
Well,
that.
there's another petitioner as well, who's the guy who comes in, and I think he says that this guy abused his daughter, and he wants Don Corleone's help. Initially, he wants to pay him to murder his daughter, and Don Corleone says, "Well, first of all, we're not murderers."
Daughters, rapists, all
Yes.
potential rapists,
Yes.
yeah,
So we're not murderers, but what he meant
right.
was, well, I mean, we would just beat him up because I mean, it's more of an eye for an eye kind of vengeance that they practice. But
Right.
also, the guy, rather than coming and kissing Don Corleone's hand and
Right.
behaving that way, he went to the police. And Don
Yes.
Corleone says, "Well, why did you go to the police? They don't help." And where have we seen that before? In the recent Korean films that we've been talking
Right,
about
right.
by Bong Joon-ho, always the bureaucrats don't help.
Correct. And it's not that lawyers don't help, because they do help in certain ways, but they cannot protect anyone. The law does not protect anyone, ever. The law is a recourse for some forms of justice. And you definitely see that there. Plus, that's the third. Oh, by the way, that's the third virgin sacrifice in the film.
Right.
So that's the third innocence being ruined by men, and which I think is also the part of the driving force and romance of crime syndicate movies. I wanted to add too, when I was saying about the idealism of youth that we're seeing, it's the idealism of the parents for their youth too. And I think it's kind of interesting that that movie, the book came out in the 60s. And by 72, when the movie was made, we've seen the disillusion of American youth with the kind of anti-corporate hippie movement trying to get back to DIY. And those kids turned
Not to mention
into,
the Vietnam War.
and the Vietnam War, we saw that generation turn into what people would call boomers and capitalists. They may have had all those ideals in the 60s, but it's not necessarily carried through to the 70s. And I thought that was kind of just it wouldn't have been maybe known then, but it's kind of interesting to look at it that way now.
Let's talk a bit about K.
What did you think of Kay?
K, well, here's my question. Michael takes off back to Sicily. She knows that his family are a bunch of murderers. He doesn't call her. He disappears. He comes back and he's back for a year. And then he shows up and with his hat and his big car and everything and says, "I love you and I want you and I want to marry you." And she goes like,
Right.
"Oh, okay."
Yeah.
Like, what's that all about?
Well, I think it's a very typical. I've known very many women like that, and I think it's easy to have happen, and you've been programmed. You've been programmed to be that acquiescent to the patriarchy. For one thing, plus she's complicit. We see her be complicit and in denial. We've talked about this before, women in gangster films, where I've said that we can see it's very codependent in that era, and it changes to where the resistance is in line with feminism, eventually with the
Yes.
feminist politics, eventually throughout, like Goodfellas up through to The Irishman. So that's kind of an interesting thing. Yeah, and also, but I want to know, what did you think of it being Diane Keaton? Isn't it stunning to see her
Oh,
like
yeah.
that? So, beginning of her career, she was in the play Hair. I think that's how she got famous. She was in
Oh, yeah,
which also took.
and she had interesting hair in this too.
Well, she did have interesting hair, probably a wig, but there you go. There's that 60s reference, and there she is, ready to sell out in The Godfather.
Oh yeah, she you know, it takes her no time at all to just go along with that. And then later, when she witnesses a conversation about all the murders after the baptism, and she asks Michael, "Is it true?" As if she didn't know it was true. As if by that point she doesn't know she's married a murderous thug. Right? She knew perfectly well it's true. And he's like, "Well, don't talk to me about my business." And then he says, "Okay, one time you can ask me about my business." And she says, "Is it true?" And he goes, "No."
No. Yeah.
Right?
And
I
it's
mean,
so weird.
his ability to lie to women in particular is, I mean, just so straight up that he's just out with lie after lie. For instance, with his sister. His sister is freaking out because she knows that her brother has just killed her husband, even though it's an abusive husband, and even though the husband had set up the Santino or Sonny character. And she knew perfectly well that he did it, and he just says, "No, would I make my sister a widow?" It's
For the
like, yeah.
portrayal, yeah, for the portrayal of men treating women in this movie, I'm going to leave it at no comment. Whatever's, it's Tuesday, isn't it? I mean, that is a very typical, if you're female, you've seen it backwards, forwards, left, right. And I mean, I had a fellow lie to me about 2 weeks ago. And it was so interesting. I heard him offer a position to somebody in an organization, and then later come to me and bold-faced lie to me. And I had not seen that he was so capable of lying like that. I was deeply impressed. And then I was like, wow, I actually thought this guy was meek and mild. He just uses that as his front. This was nothing to do with sexual politics, even. It was just, a situation with board of directors. And I was like, he didn't know that Steg and I were in the other room. We were doing some artwork at the same time that he was power playing in the main room. He had no idea we were in the building. And then later, when he said this to me, I was like, wow. And it was all with a dismissive that I was just female. So in that way, it's a body politic. It is sexual. It is gender because there's that whole dismissive, you're a female.
Well,
So it
and
doesn't matter.
one of the characters in The Godfather says, and I forget which character it is, but says, "We can't be careless. Women and children can be careless, but not men." Right? Men are the board of directors. And I mean, I'm sure both of us have worked in jobs in which it's run by a boys' club. You know, I worked in a situation where they even had a name for it. They called it the hockey team. But everybody knew what was going on. I mean, women didn't have a chance in that milieu.
And you know, it's not good for men either. That's I want to keep, I've said that before and I'll say it again. That kind of patriarchy is not good for the men in it either. It hurts everybody. And if my and Robin Wood, and I've used this quote before, he said, capitalists, that the growing, the commanding power in North America is capitalism and patriarchy. And these films show us the corruption, the corrupting power to relationships that those two forces have.
Sure, yeah, for sure.
Some great lines in this movie, of course. I still love them. They just make me happy. Swims with the fishes. Apparently, the guy that played Luca Brasi was a wrestler. I didn't know if you knew that, but I thought you might want to look into that later.
Oh, that's very interesting. Yeah,
Yeah,
he
I think he
certainly
was.
looks like a wrestler. He
Oh,
was
yeah.
a great role for him, and he did a great job. And we've seen that fish metaphor come up later in Sopranos. With that whole weird fish dream sequence.
Well, the Sopranos watched The Godfather.
Well, not only that, a number of the actors made their way
Definitely.
on their way to being in every gangster film ever made. They also made it into The Sopranos.
Well, that as I said last week, I think last week that if you look at the list of Italian American actors, it's not that large. So it's a group that is, very pulled upon for these decades in filmmaking. And it used to be that sometimes they didn't hire Italian Americans to make stories about their families. So it's a big deal that those guys got those jobs and kept showing up in films. I quickly wanted to, do you have any other movies that you think are pretty much perfect? Are you willing to make the? I, you know me, I'm going to go all out there and say I do. I wrote a list.
Of course you did. I think The Searchers is darn close.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Yeah.
What else is on your list? I haven't thought about this.
Yeah, and I mean, some of them are going to cross over with the greatest movies that, you know, critics would call that. But for me, they are all perfect. They deliver every time, just like The Godfather does. Rear Window, The Matrix, Citizen Kane, It's a Wonderful Life, Blade Runner, Apocalypse Now, Casablanca, No Country for Old Men, Groundhog Day, Vertigo, Some Like It Hot, Fight Club, Pulp Fiction, Do the Right Thing.
Interesting. I would agree with a number of the ones on that list. Sheila and I watched Vertigo last year, and I hadn't seen it in many, many years. And I was so excited to see it because I love that film, and it just fell apart for me. I thought, I can't believe I like this film. I like a lot of things that are in the film, but
yeah.
What disjointed film. It just didn't really work very successfully for me at all. I was really surprised at my reaction to it. And, you know, there are some other films that are generally accepted to be great that I'm not so excited about anymore.
Yeah, yeah. I can see that. Those ones for me hold up, and and some of them are pretty old. I've seen them many, many times, and they hold up. They are perfect for me. Are they perfect for everybody? Maybe not, but they continue to live up to being something that they give me something. They just give me something, and they provide some kind of incredible. I mean, really, Vertigo is the whole thing is a dream sequence. He made a meta film that he knows that he's in the business of making fakery. And controlling and manipulating. So in that way, it does hold up for me. I told you, I think at the pop culture convention a couple of years ago, someone had the theory that it was all his death dream, that he died when he first fell out of that building, and the rest of the story is just a dream sequence. And I thought that was pretty kind of cool and a good idea for a film too, but I really couldn't say.
If I thought of it in those terms, I might have liked it better when I saw it last year.
Right.
But there have been, I think, a number of films that surprisingly haven't held up. And I never know, you know, when I turned on The Godfather last night, I wasn't sure the degree to which it would really hold up for me. And,
I know.
And every scene really held up. I mean,
yeah.
It was just so right on over and over and over again. And
yeah.
As I mentioned when I texted you, I think, late last night, you know, you had commented when we had talked about The Irishman that maybe I have a short attention span. I caught that little dig. Well, you know, the Godfather is about 3 hours long, but it might have been 20 minutes. It just didn't matter how long it was. It could have been another hour and it wouldn't have fazed me because it was just so gripping from scene to scene to scene.
Right. Well, it is actually a couple more hours longer if you think about it. Part two.
Sure. I also noted that they did things like they changed the lighting once the war started.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
As soon as they started killing one another, all of a sudden there is this really sharp chiaroscuro. It's like film noir.
Yeah.
Of course, with that kind of reddish sepia tone all over everything. They went right to that. Everybody was in sharp contrast, a deep shadow, for quite a while during the film.
There was another beautiful scene I hadn't noticed before, and it was under bridges and overpasses. And I don't know if it was the quality on my TV or whatever, but it was as if it was an impressionist painting. It was stunning. I wish I'd pulled out my camera and taken a picture. I just didn't think of it at the time. But it was crazy. I'm going to have to rewind it and find it again. I'll try to, because I couldn't even believe how come this didn't blow my mind ever before, because it certainly did last night. And I was very, very tired, which I think is kind of a fun way to watch a film, because the tyranny of my brain was put in reserve. I was more open, more in the moment.
No, when we were talking about Michael's transformation,
yes,
from when he was an idealist and didn't really think of himself as being part of the family,
yeah.
Well, later on, when he became the Dawn, he says to Kay, and maybe he's not lying this time, he says, "My father is no different than any other powerful man."
Correct. I don't think he is different. Yep. Right?
Just in case we didn't get it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. True. Oh, and there was how many times did the word business, 5-6 times, show up in the film?
And that was very interesting because they often talked about, well, it's just business.
It's just business. Yet,
and yet clearly they were in the midst of a blood feud.
Yeah.
And when the Abe Vigoda character says it's just business, I mean, it's perfectly clear that no, this isn't just business at all. They're all complicit in this crazy blood feud in which there's going to be nobody left because they're all going to get killed off regardless of who does the killing.
Right, exactly. And we haven't learned anything from that movie at all since then, because that is the overriding message and we have seen it acting out. Now people are saying, you know, so if someone comes out right now and says, "Oh, well, we didn't know about this then." Well, we did know about it from The Godfather. We knew about it since 1972 that capitalism kills us all. It's not healthy. It's not good. And having business and money be the purpose of your existence. And you know, it's funny when they say it's just business. And yeah, Abe Vigoda says at last, I think you're right. They had that as their excuse. They thought that somehow because they had to have business and make a living in this world in this way, it justified everything. And we're still seeing that play out with corporations and war, everything else, you know?
And, you know, and the one thing that I think is, a little bit, well, interesting in that it shows that, well, yes, they're the same as a business today, a capitalist business.
Yeah.
They also show that, well, it isn't the same. It is and it isn't. It's a metaphor for it, but with these.
It's a metaphor for what?
It's a metaphor for capitalism for sure, but but these people have their business that is rooted in these false ideals of honor and virtue and family and respect.
And I think we still do that today. In mindfulness culture, you would call that the ego. You know, I mean, it's a great Buddhist film, The Godfather, too. And I mean, when I saw it, I was already practicing Buddhism. And I thought, oh, my God, you know, this is incredible. Their ego is driving all of these vendettas. So I think those things are still happening. When you see how Hillary Clinton and Trump and the other politicians, and when they do debates, they're bringing up vendettas and the past. And you did this and I did that. And I mean, you know, everybody points out Trump does it the most, maybe, but you know what? I don't think that anyone in the situation is innocent. If maybe Bernie Sanders has some kind of more polite way of speaking, but they are throwing each other under the bus with vendettas and.
Well, yes, that's true. And all the politicians, or most of the politicians, are certainly part of the term they would use in The Wire would be the game.
The game, exactly. So I don't see it as being unique to this family situation or that group of people in the movie The Godfather. I think, you know, it's been translated to so many languages that I read Mario Puzo Quit Counting. And it was translated in the 70s to all those different languages. It's like a Western. That film, for some reason, touched so many people. And I think it is because of that. What do you do for the false identity of honor, the false identity of vendetta, and for business? Those two go together. You're absolutely right that feeling of those motivations of honor is tied into the justification for why they should do what they do.
As well, I think at the time, there was also, aside from the metaphors, there was also a real curiosity about organized crime families.
Definitely, definitely.
Which, you know, people may have been vaguely aware of previously, but this was a huge exposure of that organized crime, mafia, family culture.
Right. Robin Evans, the producer, said that, you know, they actually had Frank Costello approach them. I mean, apparently there were threats and bomb threats and things that they did not want the movie being made. The crime syndicate families in New York did not want it being made. And that what they negotiated was taking out the word mafia. However, it was only in the script once. Now it's not in the script at all. But they were trying to rebrand that there is no such thing as a mafia, of course. Well, a mafia doesn't call themselves a mafia, I guess. Unless you're
that's
a
like
band.
Fight Club, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Did you read the book?
Yes, I did.
I didn't read the book. I'm curious to, and maybe I'll get around to doing that.
Yeah, I don't know if you will like how it's written. It is a pulp novel in many, many ways. It may not be the most writerly, and I read it when I was pretty young.
Writerly,
but
that's an interesting word.
Right. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. Well, I told you I was into the Valachi papers. I mean, before I watched The Godfather, by the way, I watched a movie last night, a documentary called Our Godfather. And it was fantastic. What a great movie to watch before I watched The Godfather. Kind of made Stag watch it with me. And it was about Tomasia. What was his last name? Oh, Buscetta, because it sounds like Bruschetta. Buscetta. Interesting story. And he was called the Godfather between two worlds. He had the Sicilian connection in Europe to New York and South America. It was pretty interesting. They don't do a lot with the casino. A little bit of Vegas in The Godfather.
Yes, and really the most interesting part of Vegas was the signs.
That's so
the,
true.
The scenes with the retro yeah. signs was just visually beautiful.
Very.
And we also see they're moving into an area which they're depicting as being much more decadent than mm-hmm. Than their usual business, right? And
right.
we see the Fredo character and the other guy who owns the casino, and they
Mo
show
Green,
up, and
yeah.
there's a band, and there's there's girls, and Michael
yes.
says, you know, get rid of the girls and get rid of
right.
the band.
Right. Yeah, he's so interesting because he's so intelligent. He really, it's so cool how he uses his persona and his intelligence and his knowledge to start taking over. You know, not it's definitely guns, but it is controlled. He focuses. It's pretty cool.
Also,
yeah, he's not,
also interesting
yeah.
is the elder, Don Corleone, mm-hmm. Tells him how the other families are going to come after him.
True.
Right. And
true.
He says somebody is going to come and offer a meeting, and that person will be the traitor. And then
right.
they're going to assassinate you at the meeting. Right.
Right.
And he knows it because that's what he would have done.
Also, wasn't there some beautiful poetic dialogue from Brando? I mean, he is amazing in the film. He's so sick. It sounds stupid because everybody, you know, obviously he's an amazing actor. But last night I was so charmed by his face and his work. And he imitated, apparently, I think he was imitating Frank Costello. And his way of talking when he was recorded, I guess, through the FBI or something, but I loved his poetry. He had some really beautiful ways of speaking and describing life. And, you know, this poet gangster is a beautiful image. I would compare it to maybe not quite as beautiful as Ruben Blades or Ruben Blades in The Counselor as Jefe. But I love that whole idea of this, you know, gangster being so a poet. Probably because they deal with life and death.
I wonder if Brando learned his lines for this film. I understand he was notorious for not learning his lines, so they had to put cheat sheets all over the place.
Right. Well, do you know why he did that?
No.
Well, I think it was to be fresh. To not preconceive, maybe? I think he wanted
maybe,
to have it fed to him.
Or lazy.
Well, maybe lazy. Maybe at that point. I mean, I guess he certainly used to memorize his lines because he did stage work, but... oh my God, it doesn't matter to me. He could do whatever he wants. You know what I mean? Like, they could have had an earbud in him, and I would accept it because he was so beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
So
sure.
amazing. Oh, it makes me want to cry, actually. It just makes me want to cry. Just what an incredible actor. Amazing. Hey, so we recommend The Godfather if you haven't seen it.
absolutely. I suspect it's one movie that most of our listeners have seen.
I would say you're probably right. I know one or two that have not, so maybe
it's
this
possible
will,
there's a younger generation that hasn't.
That's what I'm thinking, and I hope I feel very confident. You know, when we were talking about it with The Irishman, I was like, does it still hold up? Could young people see it? Absolutely. I just couldn't understand how you could not get something from that movie. I just wouldn't. I'd like to hear it. If you think it's a useless movie, please write us.
Yes, I'd like to hear that too.
And I want to speak out for another brilliant film. In my list, I realized that some of my favorite perfection that I think are perfect movies, many of them are Coppola. Apocalypse Now is on there. And I love The Cotton Club. I remember when I saw The Cotton
I love
Club,
the Cotton Club as well.
I ran and got you and made you come with me like the next day. You have
There
to
you
see this
go. And
movie.
I remember you pointed out to me, and this goes back to an earlier episode we
I know
did
what you're going to say,
called
F-holes.
F-Holes, because it was you who pointed out to me that split second when there was F-holes painted or tattooed onto a naked female torso.
Right. Her back end,
Yes, just you
her
just
tramp
see it.
stamps.
If I never would have seen it if you hadn't stopped it and showed me. And
Right.
it's one
Well,
of
I
those
didn't
tiny
stop it
little.
because we saw it in the theater. I didn't stop it. I may have stopped it for you after we saw the movie
After, yes.
when I had it on at home, and then I stopped it to prove my point or something. But
Yes, but I mean, it's very possible you could have felt that without ever seeing it. It just came and went so fast.
Yes. And as a matter of fact, that very still in that scene has a lot of aesthetic that is so similar to the one I was telling you about under the bridges with the cars and the street, with the diffused lighting, very going back to surrealism and then a little bit of impressionism. I mean, that was cool that they made a surrealistic reference to because it was very Man Ray, that image.
Oh, the other thing I wanted to talk about in this one, in our not so mini episode about the Godfather, is another transformation, and that was the Don Corleone death scene, when at the moment of his death, we see the monster he really was. He has his grandson there, and he puts in. What did he use for fake teeth to become a monster? And he starts wandering through the tomatoes, looking like the Frankenstein monster. And I thought, look at this. In the moment of his death, he's revealing himself in all his ugliness as a horrible monster for just that
Wow,
second.
that's chilling.
Isn't it?
Chilling.
It was a
Yeah,
very
that's
powerful scene,
cool.
incredibly powerful
Very
scene.
cool. Very cool. Well, Eugene, it's been good. I've enjoyed this mini bonus episode with you.
Me too, and we'd like to thank all of our listeners for tuning in. Thank you for
It's
that's
okay.
the let's just
We'll do it one more time. That's
do it one more
okay.
time. It's when we don't when we plan stuff, we're really
Can you
shitty.
keep that? Okay. Listen, thank you so much for listening. That is our discussion on The Godfather. I also wanted to mention that Mario Puzo was involved with writing not only The Godfather, but also The Cotton Club.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's a nice little tidbit to add.
Right. And didn't you have something you found out about the wrestler guy?
Oh yeah, the actor who played Luca Brasi was apparently an enforcer. He was an actual
Allegedly.
mobster, as well as
Wow.
allegedly, as well
Allegedly.
as a pro wrestler.
Cool. That's awesome information. Listen, thanks so much for listening.
And you've been tuned into the agency, a special edition called
Just business.
Just Business. This is just a disaster. All right, hang
Oh,
on.
I loved it. I can't believe it. It's a disaster. That's a wrap. Let's just end it here and keep that.
Right.